You're listening to Jeff Metcalf on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
But speaking just for me and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but she ain't never failed. And if the Russians don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We're gonna put her feet back on the paths of righteousness, and then God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America, did you? You never did think that we'd ever get together again. We're damn sure good. You were walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would happen again.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome back or welcome aboard. Jeff Metcalf with you here on WorldNet Daily Radio. Now that the never-ending story of Election 2000 has finally ended, we can get on to other stuff. And this hour is going to be interesting. I met our guest some time ago, and he is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the Marshall Islands. Alan Fields, I want to welcome you, Judge, to the studios and ask you right out of the box, how the heck does a judge from California end up becoming the Chief Justice of a foreign country?
It takes a little bit of ingenuity, but it's quite simply, I read an article in the a legal newspaper. They were looking for a culturally sensitive judge in the Marshall Islands, and I had just come off of having two juries out deliberating in Sacramento, and I was beginning to select the third one, and I thought there must be life after retirement and Superior Court. So I responded and sent my application resume out to the Marshall Islands and then looked on the map to find out where the Marshall Islands were.
That's kind of like when I came to Sacramento. I thought that San Francisco was the capital of California.
But it was rather interesting. There were 400 applicants, including one plumber from Toronto, Canada, who thought that he might qualify. But I got the job, and so I was there. I lived there for a year on the capital island of Majuro, and sat on the high court, which is the trial court. And then, 6 months later, I went back and to redo the Constitution. There was a constitutional convention, and we were trying to redo the mistakes that Lawrence Tribe made when he originally drafted it.
Oh, the infamous Lawrence Tribe from Harvard University.
Yes, and then a year later... 2 years later.
By the way, I guess this Bush-Cheney administration means that Larry's not going to get an appointment to the Supreme Court.
Hopefully. But then I went back in February, or not February, but April of 96, and I was the only one considered at that point as the Chief Justice, so I've been there since April of 96.
Where is the Marshall Islands for those people like me who had to go to the map after we first met?
Well, I had to go to the map when I sent my resume out to see where they were going. But they're the first island nation, an independent island nation, in Micronesia. When you go from Honolulu, you hit the Marshall Islands first and then go through the Federated States of Micronesia.
How many islands are there?
There's over 1,200 islands. Most of them are uninhabited. The population out there is about 52,000. 10,000, there's 10,000 more Marshallese, but they're spread all over most of them in the United States.
What kind of economy do they have?
Very little. It's most of their money comes from the United States in the way of compact payments. We took them over in 45 when we, quote, liberated them and from the Japanese. And we controlled them under a trusteeship from the United Nations until 1986 when they became completely independent.
I'm surprised they'd even want to be independent.
Well, they hadn't been independent for almost 100 years. The Spanish claimed them first but did nothing. Then the Germans claimed them and used the coconuts plantations there. And then the Japanese took them over in 1914 and controlled them until the end of the war.
Most of their, most of these islands are just tiny little atolls and spread all over the area, right?
Well, some of them aren't so tiny. Like the capital, Majuro, is 30 miles long. It may be narrow.
The size of Rhode Island.
Well, it's probably a little narrower than Rhode Island because most about a third of the island you could drive down the road, and on one side right at the end of the road is the ocean, the other side is the lagoon.
I don't mean to be discourteous, but what kind of work is there for a Supreme Court to do in an island that is arguably, what do they subsist on? Except for the money that the United States gives them, is it fishing and some agriculture?
There's no agriculture because they're coral sand. It's all coral sand, and not a heck of a lot grows in the coral sand other than coconut trees and bananas and papayas.
Now, were they impacted by that recent treaty that Clinton signed protecting all the coral reefs and stuff?
No. They have not signed any treaty protecting the coral reef. At this point, no.
So you spend a year down there. Then how did you end up getting promoted to being Chief Justice?
Well, actually, I...
And by the way, if you get a robe like Rehnquist does with stripes on it and stuff...
No, but I'm going to get the stripes. we had black robes when I went out there in 93, but I talked the Chief Justice of the trial court and the President of the country into switching to blue robes because I figured that we should have blue robes to match the Pacific instead of black robes that, out of some respect for some dead English king who died centuries ago.
And it's the flag of Marshall Islands, too.
Islands has a dark blue flag with an orange and a white stripe in it and a big white sunburst up in the corner.
So you're getting blue robes when you go back and you're going to put stripes on yours.
I'm going to take the stripes with me, I think. If it's good enough for Rehnquist, it's good enough for me.
How did you end up getting the appointment as Chief Justice?
Oh, well, that's what I... I lived there for a year, 93 to 94, and then went back in the end of 94 to be the legal advisor to the Constitutional Convention. And then in February of 96, I saw in their daily news, or their weekly newspaper, which I still subscribe to, that the then Chief Justice, who was a very well-known, respected attorney in Honolulu, had resigned. So I sent my inquiry to the Marshallese judge and said, if you're still interested in an American and still part-time, I'd be interested. So in April of 96, I got the appointment as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I'm the only one on the Supreme Court that gets paid, and it's a full, well, it's not full-time, but it's I'm the only one on there. When I have a session, I have to go to the cabinet and ask the president and the cabinet to appoint two other judges to sit with me. So
where do they come from, Hawaii?
Well, I've had them from all over. I've had them from Palau and Saipan. I've had two of the judges, they're Americans, that sit there on the Nuclear Claims Tribunal in Marshall Islands sit with me. But the last few times I've had the senior judge from the Ninth Circuit, Alfred Ted Goodwin, and Sam King from Honolulu sit with me.
We don't think good things about the Ninth Circuit Court, by the way.
Well, I will tell you that I asked that question of Ted Goodwin. He said none of his cases that he wrote were overturned by the Supreme Court, but he had trouble with some of the other people.
Well, I frequently refer to the Ninth Circuit Court as the most overturned court in the land. Well,
it is. They have a rating of close to 90%. So if you lose there, you know you can get to the U.S. Supreme Court and win.
I know there have been discussions about cutting up the Ninth Circuit into a couple of different... Is that going to resurface again?
I suspect it will. It's going to resurface until such time as they do. As long as they have the judges that they do have on the Ninth Circuit that are constantly being reversed...
It's such a large piece of geography, too. Now, you don't have that problem in the Marshall Islands. How often do you have sessions?
Probably three, four times at the most during the year.
And what kind of stuff would you address? I mean, it sounds as if...
Last year we were probably had the most important two cases ever heard out there. There was a fight between the then president and the speaker of the their parliament and over the powers of each, and the government had come to a complete halt. They had no budget. Every time they would try to transact some business.
Now, was any of that a function of the fact that Lawrence Tribe participated crafting the Constitution?
No, not on that one. But the president would get up and walk out, and there wouldn't be a quorum to transact business. And he claimed that the the president of the, or the speaker of the parliament was making erroneous rulings, and we had our Supreme Court session and ruled in favor of the speaker of the parliament on two cases involving the power of their government. And as a result, 2 weeks later, they had an election, and most of the president's cabinet were defeated. So then in January of this year, the new president was elected, the first commoner in the island, and he's presently the president, but he was the speaker of the parliament that we ruled in his favor.
Alan, we'll take a brief pause for some business. We'll come back and we'll continue our discussion with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the Marshall Islands, Alan Fields. I'm Jeff Metcalf. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Jeff Metcalf on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Okay, it is 20 minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here with you. We're speaking with the Chief Justice of the Marshall Islands Superior Court, Supreme Court, Alan Fields, who is a Californian. It's a full-time, part-time gig for you, right?
Yes, yes.
You're the Chief Justice, and when you have to go there, you go there, and it's hot, right?
Wonderful weather, especially at this time of the year in Sacramento.
I've got to ask you, given your stature, we've just been through a lesson, probably more facts and evidence than most Americans wanted to be exposed to. But the ruling of the Supreme Court, the last one, which depending on which side of the political fence you're on, was either a 7-2 or a 5-4 decision. I had kind of mixed feelings about that. I thought it was, number one, probably brilliant on the part of Rehnquist to do what he did. Leave a door cracked open, but not enough time to do anything. But I also thought it was kind of sleazy and maybe a little disingenuous and not having any finality to it. I'm curious, what was your impression of what the Supreme Court did?
My impression was the same as yours. I felt that they could have very easily decided that the first time up and a very definite decision come out, and we could have stopped all this further practice of witchcraft that they were trying to do, holding up magnifying glasses to the ballots and trying to figure out the intent that somebody had.
I mean, I even heard some people saying that, I think it was Breyers who said that one of the victims is people can't trust judges anymore, and there's an RC that say the Supreme Court can't rule. He was talking very clearly, and it wasn't about his colleagues. He was talking about that renegade Supreme Court in Florida who were legislating from the bench.
That's correct. That's correct. I thought that the U.S. Supreme Court should have come down harder and just very definite said, hey, what they're doing, they're changing the rules in the middle of the, or after the election. They can't do it. And, you know, they could have very easily made that decision and said, boom.
I think I know the answer to this question, but you didn't see it as a partisan decision on their part, did you?
No. I have served in all levels of the courts in Sacramento, in the Municipal and Superior Court, and sat on the for a couple of months in the appellate court, now in the Supreme Court. I have the ultimate confidence in the Supreme Court because they can go nowhere but other than make their decisions what they feel is correct.
The question that a lot of people are asking right now, the best wish of some, I mean, everybody is saying they probably want to come up with a 9-0 decision, but they just can't manufacture a fiction that they can wrap around that. So it was probably going to be 7-2, and it was going to be 7-2 because Ginsburg was going to go along partisan lines. And doesn't that kind of discount the perception that, you know, they can judge the law based on the law and their partisan or philosophic impressions aren't going to impact their decision?
I would prefer to think that it wasn't a political decision, that they were viewing the law differently. But, of course, they view it differently because of their political positions.
How much does that impact on a judge?
Political decisions?
Yeah.
On the lower levels, it has a big impact, but in the Supreme Court, it should not, because there's no place, if they make a decision politically, there's no way that they can advance their career at that point. They're already at the top.
I've always been fascinated by how legal scholars, in Lawrence Tribe, notwithstanding the fact that he is a liberal Harvard law professor, last year he had kind of an epiphany, and it kind of shocked me because I've been saying this for 20 years now, that in the Constitution, when it talks about we the people, it means we the people. And it doesn't mean different things in different parts depending on what your preconceived opinion or desires are. Last year, Lawrence Tribe, it's kind of a prelude to this Emerson case kicking around, he said, you know, I was wrong. And I give him credit for that, to acknowledge it, and that the Second Amendment means what the Second Amendment means, and we the people is we the people. It's not a collective right, it's an individual right. Do members of the Supreme Court go through that same kind of philosophical examination, or when they get there, I mean, we've seen justices change. Justices that were perceived to be conservative end up surprising people sometimes. What happens to a judge when they get to the Supreme Court?
Hopefully they're looking at the law and what they feel the law says, and they're making their interpretation of what the law is, and uninfluenced by anything else. It's not always the case, but it's what should be.
How often does that happen?
Oh, I couldn't begin to tell you. I'd have to look at each individual case. I suspect that it should not happen on the U.S. Supreme Court. On the state courts, yes, it would.
Let me ask you kind of a sidebar question, and I asked you this when we had lunch a couple of weeks ago. As the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the Marshall Islands, would it be possible for you to legislate from the bench and get away with it?
Yes.
How?
I could make any decision that I want because there's no appeal for my decisions out there. It would be a dishonest opinion, but I wouldn't do it, but yes, it's possible. I'm sitting there being a resident of Sacramento County, and I can make a decision out there. I represent one-third of their government. Nobody can appeal from my decisions. I could overrule whatever the president and or the parliament say, and there's no appeal. The most they could do...
What kind of oversight is there?
Impeachment. They could impeach me for certain grounds.
I mean, allegedly in this country we have three branches of government, supposed to be co-equal. They each have their own job functions, although in the last several decades they've been poaching on one another. In the Marshall Islands, is it the same way? Is the executive, your parliament and the judiciary, are they separate but equal?
Yes. And when I was sworn in for another six-year term in May of this year, the president came to the courthouse to swear me in. And he told the nation out there that they are not to try to interfere with the independent judiciary. So,
how many subordinate courts are there? In, you said there's, what, 50,000 people down there?
There are community courts, which are non-lawyers on the various islands, the outer islands.
Now, how are they organized? Are they in, do they have municipalities? Are there counties? Are they still tribal?
They have atolls, and the atolls have their own courts, if there's enough judges on, or enough people living on in the islands.
What I'm trying to get at is, what kind of organizational structure is there?
The community courts are part-time, and they only get paid $2 an hour when they work. And they may not even work for a month or so, or they may work. But then above that, they have the district courts, which try the traffic, and I assume that there's only traffic citations on the main island.
What, if any, strategic significance do the Marshall Islands hold for the United States?
The Marshall Islands are very strategic in that the Kwajalein Atoll, or the Kwajalein Lagoon, is where we shoot our missiles from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California.
That's what they get their money for.
Into that lagoon. No, that's part of it. The landowners there get paid for the use of that lagoon. And the islands there, but
and all the fish they can pick up when they're done shooting, right?
Well, probably, but that's the main purpose why the Army is there. And we're also trying to shoot on one of the outer islands, or one of the islands in the Kwajalein Lagoon, is where we're trying to shoot the interballistic missiles down by shooting up the interceptor missiles. We've missed twice, but we're still trying.
Judge Fields, stay with us. We're going to take a brief pause here, and we'll be back in a moment. I have some more questions for the Chief Justice of the Marshall Islands Supreme Court. We'll also open the phone lines for you folks at 877-456-6789. If you want to email me, you can do that at gmetcalf@worldnetdaily.com. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, albeit of the Marshall Islands, Alan Fields, is our guest, and we'll be back with more right after this. Don't go away.
You're listening to Jeff Metcalf on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Blue on black. 34 minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here with you at 877-456-6789. That's our toll-free number. We're speaking with the Chief Justice of the Marshall Islands Supreme Court, Alan Fields. And, Alan, we're just talking off the air, and you mentioned something that I missed entirely. I didn't realize it was as big a deal as it was. But in the recent Supreme Court ruling, the 7-2/5-4 decision, when Justice Ginsburg dissented, you noted that there was something significant about the way she dissented, which I missed. What was that all about?
Well, I picked it up on a TV program where they were interviewing a former clerk for Scalia, and she pointed out that there has never, to her knowledge, has ever been just somebody who dissented by saying, "I dissent." They always say, "I respectfully dissent," whether they respectfully dissent or not, but they always use the word respectful. And respectfully, and she did not. She just said, "I dissent." And to this clerk, it was a big deal for her.
So the absence of the word respectfully, it was more than just form. There was some actual substance to it.
It appears to be that way.
I can ask you something, because the Marshall Islands is it's down somewhere south of Hawaii, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Back in August, I did a story for WorldNet Daily, and I'm still getting grief for it, and I'm just curious if you heard anything about it. I heard from a number of different sources that, and this was long before it was announced the president was going to Vietnam. There was two parts to the story. Number one, that the president was going to go to Vietnam before the end of his term and after the election. That was part one. And part two was that there had been instructions from somewhere that naval regulations were to be changed to accommodate a requirement that the Vietnamese have that no flag ever fly equal or superior to theirs, and they wanted the U.S. flag flown subordinate. I had it on real good authority, and the guys wanted to remain anonymous because they're fearful of recriminations and everything else. And then subsequently, it was acknowledged that, well, yeah, there were discussions, but we said no, and yeah, the president did go to Vietnam. He wasn't on a Navy ship. Did you guys hear anything about that down in your neck of the woods?
Yes, and it was confirmed to me by two sources, high-ranking Navy officials on both sides of the coast of the United States, that there was the discussions made, and these discussions originated not with the Navy, but from the Secretary of Defense's office.
So the discussions did take place.
Yes.
I wasn't making it up out of whole cloth.
No, very definite. Well, and also, it was confirmed the president did go to Vietnam.
Well, they conveniently forget to mention that part of the story.
No, it did happen, and there were discussions, and I suspect because of... I did see your releases on the WorldNet, and that I suspect that without your bringing this forward, it quietly would have been done.
That's amazing. I intend after the holidays to contact some people in the hopes that with the change in administration, they won't be as fearful of either, you know, getting screwed out of some rank or retirement or anything else, and they'll be able to acknowledge what they told me off the record before, and that, yeah, these discussions took place, and the plan was to try to accommodate the requirement of the Vietnamese, which is outrageous. And a lot of veterans groups, I'm getting two flavors of stories, either, you know, thanks, great job, attaboy, you saved us from something terrible. And on the other side, shame on you, how dare you, and, you know, you're a hack, and you're making this up out of whole cloth and everything else. But you had it from a couple of different coasts that it did happen.
I can guarantee you that it did happen. I would stake my life on it.
Well, I'm going to write that down. Let me get to Emily, who's calling from San Francisco. Emily, you're on the air with Jeff Metcalf and Chief Justice Alan Fields.
Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Chief Justice, I was wondering if, did you not, I agreed with you first that this was not a political call. This was a call of necessity because most Americans had been talking about the same thing. How can you make this decision by just gleaning or just, you know, making a divining if whether a person had voted who had not indicated any vote? But anyway, my question is, did you feel the Supreme Court of the United States felt obligated to take this case, mainly because if they don't think along the lines of the popular vote, they think along the lines of the electoral vote, in other words, keeping the United States together, where most of the states had voted, and Florida was indicating problems within their own electoral system. Thank you.
Well, I think that the U.S. Supreme Court could only consider the Electoral College. They can't consider the popular vote because our Constitution provides for the Electoral College system. But I think that they had to do something because the Florida Supreme Court was so wrong in their decision. And as again, they were practicing witchcraft, trying to tell the people to look at those ballots with these huge magnifying glasses, holding them up to the light, trying to discern what the intent of somebody was who probably had no intent at all to do anything.
See, one of the things that surprised me was I was shocked after the Florida Supreme Court made their last ruling that Justice Scalia came forward and that the Supreme Court did anything. I mean, they sandbagged on that decision out of Florida until the end of the day on Friday. I'm sure on the assumption that, well, Supreme Court's not going to do jack about this until maybe Monday. And the fact that they responded so quickly, I thought was just incredible. And given the fact that they did respond so promptly and put the brakes on the recount in Florida, I guess I was disappointed and surprised that their final decision wasn't more definitive.
I was, too. I thought it should have been more definite, and they could have done it at the very beginning when they first heard the case, we would not have been tormented as much as we had been for the last few days.
We know the damage this has done to the country and to the parties and everything else. Has this helped or has it hurt the judiciary? I mean, obviously in Florida, they're SOL.
No, I don't think that there's any long-term effect on the decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. We've had 5-4 decisions throughout the history of the Supreme Court. This will long be forgotten, except the media will keep it alive as long as they can.
And academia will be writing textbooks about it for decades to come. Alan, stay with me. We're going to take a brief pause. It's about 19 minutes before the top of the hour. 877-456-6789 is the toll-free number. I'm Jeff Metcalf. We're speaking with the Chief Justice of the Marshall Islands Supreme Court, Alan Fields. If you got any questions for him, give us a call. 877-456-6789. It's toll-free.
KSFO.
Looking for answers and nobody knows.
It's about 15 minutes before the top of the hour. 877-456-6789 is a toll-free number. I'm Jeff Metcalf. We're speaking with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the Marshall Islands. And I wanted to ask you about, it was interesting, because we've just suffered through this, election thing with the new president and so forth. The way they do it in the Marshall Islands, I think, is interesting, and I want to get to that in a moment. But first, Tom's calling from Elk Grove, so let's get Tom on the air. Tom, you're on with Chief Justice Fields.
Hi, Justice Fields. I have a question for you that I don't understand. I'm a citizen in the state of California, and I know that since the beginning of our Constitution, there was a protection against any new taxes being levied unless there was a 2/3 vote of the people. And just this last election, somehow the ability to raise the property taxes was voted into place with a simple majority. I don't understand how you can get around the constitutional protection of 2/3 vote requirement by having a referendum that only takes a simple majority. Do you have an opinion about that?
That is a great question, Tom. Thanks.
Well, no, I don't, because fortunately I was out of the country in the Marshall Islands during the election, and I have no idea what the results were. And I'm not particularly interested at this point.
But academically, if a 2/3 requirement to be changed by a simple majority in an initiative process doesn't seem kosher.
No, it doesn't to me either. If it says it's 2/3, I think you're talking about Proposition 13 that came in a few years ago that requires 2/3 vote to raise any taxes.
There has been a whole boutique industry that has erupted around ways to circumvent Prop 13.
They say it's not taxes, it's a special assessment.
It's a fee.
Right. Yeah. So they're doing away with it now.
Rose by any other name. You mentioned that in the Marshall Islands, the way they select their president is kind of interesting. Now, first off, your Constitution is only, what, about 10 years old?
It was actually enacted in 1979. in looking forward to their complete independence in 1986. So it really took effect in 1986. But they had to get the approval of the U.S. Congress as well as the approval of the people in the Marshall Islands.
How do they select a president in the Marshall Islands?
They have, it's a unique system out there. If you have land rights on different islands, and you get land rights coming down through your mother, not your father, if you have land rights, you can decide which island or which atoll you're going to vote from. And each atoll or combined atolls have different numbers of senators that they elect. Like in Majuro, the capital, they have the right to select 5 senators. And then in Kwajalein, they have 3 because that's where most of the population is. And then the other islands are split up, and there's a total of 33 senators elected. And you, as I said, that the people can decide which island they're going to register to vote from if they have land rights there. But the 33 senators are elected, and then they meet in January, and then the 33 electors, or senators rather, then select the president from their membership. And then the...
kind of way some city councils select a mayor from their membership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a parliamentary system patterned more after the English system than the United States. And then the president then selects up to 10 or 11 cabinet members who run the country.
Depending on who voted for them.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. It's, he selects those, and then the cabinet and the president run the country in between the sessions of the Nitijala or their parliament.
Okay, now here's a question. If the senators get elected, they choose a president, the president chooses a cabinet, all from the same pool of 33 senators.
Yes.
Once they have this additional responsibility, do they still function as a senator for their district, or is someone else elected?
No, they're still all senators from their district. And they have to be reelected every 4 years because that's how the term is service.
I'm going to take a brief pause. When we come back, I want to ask you how the ubiquitous Lawrence tribe factored into the organization of the Constitution of the Marshall Islands. We'll continue this discussion with Chief Justice Alan Fields in a moment. I'm Jeff Metcalf. 877-456-6789 is a toll-free number. Don't go away.
You're listening to Jeff Metcalf on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
There we go. Thank you, James. I had the button down. 7 minutes before the top of the hour, Jeff Metcalf here with Chief Justice of the Marshall Islands Supreme Court, Alan Fields. I got to ask you this question, Alan, because I just got called for jury duty again. And last time they called me, they said thanks, but no thanks. And... they excused me because I believe in jury nullification. I think that a juror's rights include the right to judge not only the facts and evidence, but the law. And if a judge gives me instructions that are contrary to that, I got a problem. I'm between the rock and the hard place. As a judge, what's your view of someone who tells you, if you give me instructions to judge a law that I think is wrong, I think you're wrong?
I would be very polite and say you're excused, Mr. Metcalf.
Why? I mean, why can't...
Because your duty as a juror is to judge the facts. You determine the facts, but you must follow the law that the judge gives you.
What if the law is an error?
Then it's up to the legislature to correct it, not you.
But a juror's rights, that's part of a juror's rights.
Not in California. You have to follow the law that's given to you. You're supposed to. Many times the jurors don't, but they don't tell the judge in advance that that's... their feeling.
So when I tell them that I'm going to stick to my guns on this, they can't compel me to vote other than my conscience, and they're going to say thanks, goodbye, good luck, and get out.
That's right, because during the jury deliberations, you can do what you want. Yeah, your duty is to judge the facts in the case, and supposedly you don't know the law.
Oh, wait a minute, you say in California. I seem to recall a little incident that was on all the TV stations about O.J. Simpson. And it didn't seem like that jury listened to the facts and evidence.
I would agree entirely with you. on that case. And that's why I say that those jurors didn't tell the judge that they weren't going to follow the law.
So if I'm honest, they're going to say, don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out.
Well, I'd be more polite and say, see you later.
Alan, I want to thank you very kindly. This is just fascinating. When a mutual friend introduced us, I said, wait, how can this guy be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the Marshall Islands is a foreign country.
Yes.
Yet be a resident of California, a former judge from California. And do they have any indigenous members of the bar?
Yes.
They do.
But there are two or three attorneys, but there are five or six trial assistants, which means that they can practice law. They've had some experience in representing people.
Like paralegals?
Yes. But there's very few Marshallese that have actually graduated from law school.
Now, the only other question I had for you is, you in effect are one branch of government in the Marshall Islands.
Yes, one of three.
The question is, what happens if or when you tick off one of the others? I mean, is some tribe going to come and hit you over the head or kneecap you?
No, fortunately, they don't have guns out there. They're all illegal.
Well, I would disagree with you on that, but okay.
They can impeach me, but they have to find good cause. In the Constitution, it's set up that they have to find good cause to impeach me.
What was the role of Lawrence Tribe in crafting the Constitution of the Marshall Islands?
I suspect that he came out there because of the U.S. government saying, here, these people want to have a Constitution. You're a scholar, quote, a scholar from Harvard. And he came out and roughly, he did draft the Constitution for them.
So Lawrence Tribe is kind of like the Thomas Jefferson of the Marshall Islands.
No. He's one of those that made mistakes, and they're still trying to change them.
Alan, I want to thank you very kindly for being with us. Good luck. Safe travels back to the Marshall Islands.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
It's been a pleasure having you here. Alan Fields, the Chief Justice of the Marshall Islands Supreme Court. We're going to take a brief pause at the top of the hour. When we come back, we will revisit some of this post-election stuff. And I want to get back to something that Alan brought up just a moment ago, and that was this bit that I missed entirely about Justice Ginsburg in her dissent. And I'll see if I can pull up the actual language of it, and we can address that as well. Apparently, according to him, the fact that in her dissent she said, I dissent, and didn't add the word respectfully, as is traditional and conventional, that's a big deal. It's more than just form over substance, and we'll see if we can get any lawyers out there to give us a call and get into that as well. 877-456-6789 is the toll-free number. You can email me anytime, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, at gmetcalf@worldnetdaily.com. Stay with us. You're listening to WorldNet Daily Radio. Don't go away.